Welcome back. Coming to you live from Coast Las Vegas affiliate, KXNT, News Talk Radio, 840 AM. Greg Bishop, our webmaster, he has posted some amazing stories up at the website, coasttocoastam.com, tonight, including this is a piece from The Telegraph about a flooded 16th century church, which has suddenly resurfaced in Mexico due to a devastating drought there. It was a Catholic church. Not just the church, it was an entire town that it once inhabited, and it was flooded over back in 1962 as part of the construction of the dam, but with a drought causing water levels to decrease rather dramatically, the church is once again visible to residents in the area. And again, you can read the whole article and see the video there as well. Greg has posted that in the highlight section at coasttocoastam.com. If you know someone who loves Coast to Coast AM, but maybe they're not a night owl like you are, you need to tell them how to become a Coast Insider. It only costs, what, like 15 cents a day, which is ridiculous, really, when you think about it. And once they sign up, they can have the show delivered right to their desktop or their smartphone. And, of course, they can access thousands and thousands of past shows, take part in chats with George and other hosts and guests. Do them a huge favor. Tell them about becoming a Coast Insider, then simply send them to coasttocoastam.com, where they can become a member. It's as simple as that. All right, when we come back, Dr. Randall Montgomery will examine the alien abduction phenomenon through the prism of the bicameral mind. You're going to want to stay tuned for this, and then we will open the phone lines, and you can have at him. I know many of you are very anxious to do so, particularly after hearing him take on Roswell. But we will make the phone lines available to you at the bottom of the hour. Aliens and UFOs with Dr. Randall Montgomery right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast to Coast AM. Dr. Randall Montgomery, the author of Aliens and UFOs, Physical, Psychic, or Social Reality. Just a reminder, coming up later in the program, the Cadaver Dog and Charlie Manson. Paul Dosti takes us back to Barker Ranch nearly 50 years on. Right now, we're going to, I'll get you to put on your psychologist's hat. You do have a degree in psychology, Randall. And talk to me about alien abduction, the alien abduction phenomenon through the, you talk about Julian Jaynes, who was an American psychologist,
origin of
consciousness, and the bicameral mind.
Yes. Well, he died in 1997, and he was a very controversial psychologist who I'd never actually heard of when I was in university. But he did get a lot of interest and controversy going. He defined consciousness as synonymous with what philosophers call meta-consciousness or meta-awareness, like awareness of awareness, thoughts about thinking, desires about desires, beliefs about beliefs. And this form of reflection is distinct from the kind of deliberations seen in higher animals. He wrote that ancient humans before roughly, very roughly, 1000 BC were not reflectively metaconscious like we are. He thought that primitive people before 1000 BC roughly were more automatic and non-conscious. And so instead of having metaconsciousness, they had what he called the bicameral mind. And so these people, when habit didn't handle a novel situation and stress arose, the left hemisphere was modulated by auditory verbal hallucinations originating in the right hemisphere. And they were heard as the voice of a chieftain or a god or some deity, and they were obeyed. I know it sounds bizarre, but that's what he thought. He said, for bicameral humans, volition came as a voice that was in the nature of a neurological command in which the command and the action were not separated, in which to hear was to obey.
All right. So what does this mean in terms of the alien abduction phenomenon?
It occurred to me, and this is just a hypothesis, I'm not married to it, that perhaps people who feel that they have having these experiences with aliens are having a kind of a throwback, that their minds are more like this pre-modern mind, that they have this bicameral mind, and they're experiencing things kind of through the right hemisphere.
It's kind of a
hallucination, and that they're kind of a throwback to these earlier people. Like, he thought that a lot of the Greek wars were actually fought by warriors who were under these delusions that the gods were telling them what to do, and they even thought the statues were literally talking to them. A statue of a Greek god they would stand in front of it, and they would have these hallucinations, audio hallucinations, and think that they were getting commands. So I just thought it was an interesting angle, perhaps, on people who are convinced that these abduction phenomena are real.
Well, you say you're not married to it. You may want to break off the engagement, I'm guessing. I don't know.
Well, I'm kind of hoping to stir up some debate there.
Well, yeah, that is a valuable thing to do. Absolutely. No question. But I'm guessing there will be people calling in and people who have had such encounters or experiences. They are otherwise not delusional. They're not mentally ill.
Well, I wanted to talk about that.
They speak in such precise detail. They have been extremely traumatized in many cases.
Yes.
I can't imagine that is some simple trick of the mind, Randall.
Well, let's get on to some of my other explanations. John Mack, he boasts in his book that the people that he dealt with were not insane. But of the 76 abductees, he only had 4 of them psychologically tested. That's only 5%. So I just don't think he can make that statement that the people I dealt with were tested and they were found not to have mental problems. That's one point. Now, Bud Hopkins, in his book Intruders, he summarizes the results of a personality profile of 9 abductees conducted by a psychologist named Slater. And she found that the abductees, compared to the control group, displayed mild paranoia, a degree of distrust, and a lack of self-esteem. And the last point here, sociologist Kenneth Ring, he wrote a book called The Omega Project, and he compared abductees with the control group, and he found that the abductees had a higher incidence of sexual or physical abuse in their past. So abductees are not psychotic, they're not schizophrenic, they're not the kind of people that necessarily need to be in mental institutions, they're not crazy in the layman's sense of the word, but there is some evidence here that they're not quite the same as control groups of people.
All right, so the sexual abuse angle here is interesting. Are you saying that somehow if someone undergoes a trauma like sexual abuse, that it causes some sort of a dissociative disorder, and their subconscious mind creates a more palatable story rather than having undergone the sexual abuse? They were now abducted by aliens. It's somewhere.
Yes, and I have to give credit to Terry Matheson, who wrote the book Alien Abductions. He came up with that idea, and I got it from him. And there's some good evidence in that book. Everyone should read that book, Alien Abductions by Matheson. He really goes through all these major abduction stories, the classic ones, and let's say dissects them and demolishes them just to show that they're not literally true. And once you read that book, you won't believe that there's any actual alien abductions at all. But the theme of the alien abduction being kind of a screen memory to protect people from the even worse memories of sexual abuse is very interesting. And it certainly seems to come through. For example, the Chajunga Canyon case by Druffel and Rogel. Some of the young women in there did have backgrounds of sexual abuse. And even going back to the original case of Betty and Barney Hill, he goes through what they said under hypnosis very carefully, and it looks like there were rapes there. I mean, I'm oversimplifying, obviously. But he actually, you get the impression that what happened there was not abduction by aliens, but they were stopped by some kind of a biker gang, and both Betty and Barney were sexually assaulted. And Betty Andreasen, one of the other famous early abductees in Raymond Fowler's book.
Let me just stop you there and go back to the Betty and Barney Hill case, because I recently interviewed Kathleen Martin, who was Betty's niece.
Uh-huh.
I don't recall her ever mentioning anything like that coming up in the. Now, did any of this come up during their hypnosis?
Yeah, it all came out of that. Dr. Matheson has gone through the transcripts of the hypnosis very carefully, and many, many times they refer to men rather than aliens or creatures. It's nearly always men. They talk about a roadblock on the road. And a few days after, when it looks like there's a roadblock on the road they're driving, it's Betty that gets very, very upset. This is in real life, you know. They're driving along, and it looks like the road is blocked, and she gets very upset again. So reading between the lines, it looks like they were actually intercepted by some kind of a what we call nowadays a biker gang, and sexually assaulted. And there's all this sexual imagery, of course, you know, the piercing of the navel with a kind of a phallic-shaped device, et cetera. So he's looking at the... At the
I don't know. Okay, so roadblocks, and they mention men.
They always mention men. It's fascinating. If you read his book, you'll see over and over again, Dr. Simon talks about creatures. Barney goes back to talking about them as men. He talks about one guy looking like a Nazi and another guy having red hair, and it's fascinating.
And so your contention is that they both then would have their minds would have created this more palatable cover story?
Well, especially Betty. Barney wasn't at all interested in this. He just kind of went along with it. He originally thought it was nonsense, this whole business of abduction by aliens. And even when he's being hypnotized and they're getting back in the car after this so-called alien abduction, Betty says, "Do you believe in flying saucers now?" And he says, "Don't be ridiculous. Of course I don't."
Hmm. Have you ever undergone
having dreams after this event? And she was talking, and that's another fascinating thing that comes up in his book, is that most of this regression seems to be pulling up people's dreams rather than, you know, some weird event that happened in the real world. And Betty's dreams are the very same as what she's saying under regression as happened to her by aliens. The only difference was in the dream, she walks up steps to the flying saucer, and in the so-called abduction, she walks up a ramp to the flying saucer.
Well, dreams, memories, I mean, how are you making the distinction? I mean, have you ever undergone a regression?
No, but I wanted to get into that. Have you ever had a dream that seemed so real you were convinced it was real until later you woke up?
Well, once I woke up, I was I was no longer convinced that it was real.
Yeah, but about 30% of the population have these. I have these really intense dreams which are so clear that they seem absolutely real. And they're caused by hypnagogic or hypnopompic states when either you're in the early stages of waking up or you're falling asleep.
Well, I can't speak to the protocols that were used by the late Dr. John Mack or Bud Hopkins or mm-hmm. Dr. David Jacobs, but I do know a number of hypnotherapists that use regression therapy,
mm-hmm.
and I don't think there's simply, you know... plumbing a dream state here, I've witnessed these regressions. These people are experiencing something real, Randall. It's
well, Matheson is very critical of the hypnotic techniques used by some of those people that we've mentioned. You know, Jacobs and Hopkins.
What do you mean by UFO?
They weren't really trained in hypnosis. You know.
Well, there is that. I mean, there are. Are growing. I mean, it's becoming increasingly more mainstream, the use of regression therapy.
Well, I'm not saying that regression therapy is useless. I'm just saying that in these particular cases, it looks like people are describing dreams rather than actual events, because they're just so completely illogical. I mean, we don't have time in this show to go through in detail, but you know what they describe just nonsensical.
All right, I want to push ahead. As you say, we don't have a lot of time. I want to talk to you about you describe in the book the origin of the Men in Black mythology, as you call it. Where did it start?
Well, again, there's always a grain of truth. I mean, you know, there are document incidents of Air Force people going around interviewing people who say they've seen UFOs. So there's a grain of truth there. But the Gray Barker, he was a kind of a popular writer, and he publicized that. He wrote the original book, and he admitted that he did it, just for money and for fun. He told that to two people. So he's actually the inventor of the Men in Black. His name was Gray Barker.
All right. What do you mean by you've sort of coined a new term? UFO neurosis. What do you mean by that?
Well, I'm saying that since John Mack says that these so-called abductees don't present, that's the clinical word, present the same as normal mental patients, I'm saying that let's have a subtype, a special category for them, and we'll call it UFO neurosis, because it seems to me these people are having what used to be called a hysterical neurosis, and now it's called a dissociative state. Dissociative disorder, rather. So I'm saying, okay, if you really think there's something unique, let's have a label for it. And it's still under the neuroses rather than the psychoses. So what I would call it a subtype of dissociative disorder.
Okay. What would it take for you to believe that an alien abduction case were credible? What sort of evidence would you need?
Well, you'd never be able to convince me. I just look at it as a psychologist and see that this is sleep paralysis, it's hypnagogic states, it's a dissociative disorder, you know, it might be the bicameral mind. I think it can all be analyzed psychologically, or it can just be dreams that people are confusing with reality because of the hypnagogic or hypnopompic state. These dreams are like hyper real seeming.
But that's kind of telling when you say, though, that you couldn't convince me. I mean, surely there must be...
Well, okay, if I was personally abducted, then I guess I would...
Only if it happened to you. All right. Well, but someone might say...
A lot of people say, I don't believe... You show me a UFO, and then I'll believe it. Up until then, I won't believe it.
But you don't go that far with UFOs. You're inclined to believe certain witnesses over others.
Yes. Well, you know, when you get very experienced pilots with thousands of hours and military pilots, et cetera, and, you know, we've had even the Foo Fighters back in World War II, which were photographed, you know, these little balls of fire that were flying alongside aircraft of both sides of the war.
Right.
How can you say there's nothing there?
Professor Persinger, another Canadian, mm-hmm. Talk to me about his recent experiments. As they relate
well,
to
he found he would get student volunteers and he would stimulate certain parts of their brains and then ask them what happened, and they would describe your classic abduction situation, classic abduction scenario.
By stimulating certain regions of the cerebral cortex.
They
would have.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, they also...
That's very hard for the people who believe in that abductions are real to deal with, you know.
Well, perhaps not, because I seem to recall in Switzerland, they did the same thing with the out-of-body experience. They stimulated certain regions mm-hmm. of the cerebral cortex, and they could reproduce mm-hmm. the symptoms of an out-of-body experience. But just because you can produce something artificially doesn't mean that the real thing doesn't exist. Listen, we're going to take a time out.
Okay.
Mavis Staples will take us into the break. Wrote a song for everyone, which is actually John Fogerty. And then we'll open up the phone lines. Are you ready to do battle? I'm guessing there'll be some of that, Randall Montgomery. Hold tight. We'll come back. More aliens and UFOs and your calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. And the brothers Gibb, and I started a joke. That's Robin Gibb. of the Bee Gees, taking lead vocals on that one. What a pretty song. At the top of the next hour, we will go back to the Barker Ranch, nearly 50 years after the Manson family's horrific killing spree in 1969, and we'll meet a man who corresponds regularly with Charlie Manson in order to pry loose some clues about the location of other victims of the Manson family. And we'll also learn about his amazing cadaver dog, Buster. When we come back, however, we will open up the phone lines and let you have at Dr. Randall Montgomery, who is, he's taking shots at Roswell researchers and Dr. Bud Hopkins, Dr. John Mack, the real luminaries of ufology. He's not pulling any punches. I'll give him that. All right, your calls when we come back right here on Coast to Coast AM. All right, Randall Montgomery, are you ready to take some calls?
Yes.
All right. I have to say this. I don't necessarily agree with you on Roswell, but I think by sort of discrediting certain UFO sightings and yet supporting others, I think you do a service in many ways to ufology, because we do have a certain segment that tends to believe everything, and then those who dismiss everything. And so you're sort of right square in the middle. Mm-hmm. So people may not like a lot of what you're saying, but I think you add a certain credibility to ufology, because you're willing to, you know, to tear down certain sacred cows, yet build others up.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
That's what I'm trying to do.
All right. How do people get a hold of your book, by the way?
Oh, just go online to booklocker.com/5920. So it's just booklocker.com/5920.
All right. Let's go west of the Rockies. Howard is in Vancouver, Washington. Good morning, Howard, or good evening, Howard. Welcome.
Hello, Richard. Good to see you again.
Likewise.
I had a question for Dr. Montgomery. Doctor, I'm one of those people who have, witnessed a few things for the past 50 years, and I have to say that once you've seen these things, you can't unsee them.
Uh-huh.
I couldn't prove that to anyone. I couldn't even prove that I'm sitting here right now. I think that the standards that science is so entrenched, and their standards are so high, that I believe that the aliens themselves would probably have a rough time trying to prove who they were. I'm just wondering if you think there will ever be any kind of evidence that would be acceptable that could prove their existence.
Well, like I say, there is good evidence, and people just don't want to look at it. Just like going right back to 1952, that Washington flap I described, or Rendlesham. The evidence is right there, but the people just don't want to accept it. Just as on the other extreme, people want to believe every kind of wild, fanciful story, even if the evidence is bad. So I really don't have a good answer for that, I'm afraid.
All right, Howard, thank you for that. East of the Rockies, Lance is in Ohio, and all right, get ready for this, Randall. He's not happy. Go ahead, Lance.
Go ahead, Lance.
No, I just had a question. What is your professional take on the many Planet X's that could come close to Earth, celestial events that could possibly wreak havoc on the Earth?
Well, that's really not what we're discussing tonight. I thought you wanted to take issue with what Randall was saying about evidence as it pertains to alien abductions and so forth. Did you have a comment on that, Lance?
Okay, I'm sorry. So no take on that?
All right, go ahead.
I don't really
ahead,
know much about that. I have nothing to say on that.
Yeah, that's really not the topic of discussion, Lance. But what do you make of what Randy is saying about, let's say, for example, the alien abduction phenomenon? Very dismissive.
Well, Richard, I don't want to say that I'm dismissive. I think that this is a big national mental health problem, that people who are traumatized by what they think are alien abductions are not getting proper treatment. They're being dealt with by people who believe in the literal truth of what the patient is saying, and that's not helpful to the patient.
Right. There is a trauma happening. It's just being misdiagnosed.
Yeah, like some people are actually quite happy with their experiences. You had a speaker on, I think it was Mary Ellen Guiley a few weeks ago, talking about this new organization that she's involved with, where a lot of people are coming forward saying they had pleasant experiences. So those people aren't traumatized and they're happy, whether it's real or not. I'm more concerned about people who are in real mental pain and they're not getting the proper treatment because they're being dealt with by people who are sharing the delusion. It's a folie à deux.
All right. Well, somehow you managed to disarm Lance because he came loaded for bear, and then when he got on the air, he really didn't want to pursue it. That's fine. We'll go to the wild card line, and Jan is in Brooklyn. Good evening,
Hi.
Jan.
Hi. I know three girls. I met them, two of them, one of them extremely close friend, another one a friend, and I actually felt implants in them. One had it in her thigh, one had it in her bridge of her nose and her ears. And the girl who had it in her thigh, she was actually impregnated by it. And she actually had to go, she had an ultrasound done. There was a baby there. And she actually saw her hand pull out the baby. And then she had to go to the hospital and it said a miscarriage. And the other girl who had it in her nose was written up in Fate magazine a couple, I don't know, 20, 30 years ago, and she was actually taken aboard spaceships, and she was impregnated, and she actually saw the babies, like in tubes or something like that, growing. So, I mean, what do you say about people? I mean, I felt these implants. They were there. They were, I mean, you could tell me it's a bump, whatever you want to say, but these people are psychic, and they're very involved into the in this area, and I actually felt it.
All right, Jan, I suspect I know what Randy's going to say to that, but we'll get it from Randall himself. Go ahead, Randall.
Well, no disrespect, but I just don't believe that. You know, there can be a lot of explanations, more prosaic explanations. You would have to give me some real, you know, medical and scientific evidence. I know this is becoming a popular theme, you know, that people are being impregnated by aliens, and I just personally don't believe it.
All right. Yeah, that pretty much covers what I thought you were going to say. To the wild card line, Mark is in Baltimore, Maryland. Good evening. Good morning, Mark.
Thank you very much, Mr. Sarek, for welcoming me back to the coast.
Good to have you with us. What do you make of Randall Montgomery?
Yes, Dr. Montgomery, first of all, let me tell you this. I had a top secret security clearance in the United States military, so I'm vetting myself for you right now. I've spoken with test pilots that have gone on to become astronauts, that have seen things that were not to be told, not to be reported upon, not any reports to be written on, or else they would be denied or they would lose their test pilot status. I wonder, I'm going to throw a whole bunch of things at you, and then I'll just maybe just get your take off the air, because I'm going to really throw a lot at you.
If we have time.
For example, you do admit that your book is a single account and it's your observation and yours only, and not representative of all ufologists such as Dr. Alan Hynek, Stanton Friedman, Ellen Crystal, Linda Moulton Howe, Kevin Randall, Don Schmidt. Did you ever speak with any of those people?
Not in person. I've read a lot of their stuff. Yeah, it's just my own book. It's my own views.
Footnotes are in your book.
Hmm?
Footnotes. How many pages of actual footnotes?
Many. The book is almost 500 pages long. There's a huge number of footnotes and references.
Are you dismissing the late Colonel Corso's entire account of the Roswell incident in his book, The Day After Roswell?
Yes, that book, I believe, was ghostwritten by Bill Burns. And it's basically, it's just a lot of this high technology has come through the efforts of American scientists. It wasn't taken from some crashed Roswell saucer.
It was co-written by Mr. Burns, who George Norrie knows, but are you trying to say that the entire book is a lie?
Well, I'll say this, that it's a basically rehash of something that came up in the 50s. The same idea was brought up in the 1950s by Major Kehoe in his book Flying Saucers Are Real. And he was saying back then that a lot of our modern stuff is taken from aliens. So it's almost like it's rehashing the same idea.
Well, if it's rehashing it, that doesn't mean it's not true. I mean, you could also argue that that lends credence to the story. I mean, are you ruling out the whole notion of back engineer technology?
Yes, Randall? I just don't believe it. You can. If you want to do the legwork, you can find the patents and you can trace how these things, such as fiber optics, were developed. You know, there's no mystery there. It just didn't suddenly come from aliens.
To have the patents. He was letting them have the patents. Are you saying that you buy into the U.S. Air Force's final report on Roswell?
Yes, I do, yes.
Uh-huh. And, well, you know, Dr. Sherrod, I have to commend you on your challenging Dr. Montgomery on several questions, one of which... For example, the note that that General Ramey was holding in the photograph of
the Ramey memo. Yes.
I agree with you, Mr. Sherrod. That has been enhanced, and that message, which is message traffic that I used to handle on a daily basis, wouldn't have pertained to any other event except that event that was. Misinterpreted in that photograph, because what that photograph is a setup photograph. It's not the real wreckage.
All right. Listen,
I will admit it's a very interesting point, that telegraph that talks about the victims of the crash. It's a very good point.
All right, and to be fair, and just to clarify for those maybe who are joining us a little late, while you are dismissive of Roswell, again, we need to point out, you list about a dozen cases of what you say are very credible UFO sightings.
Yes.
All right. Thank you for that, Mark. And that was sort of more of what I was expecting to hear from callers tonight. Some of they've been unusually tame, really, in this regard. Let's go to the first time line. And, oh, it's Terry Matheson calling from Canada and the author of the book Alien Abductions. Terry, welcome to Coast to Coast.
Oh, thank you for having me on.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, the first thing I'd like to say is I have some information about Roswell that will not conflict with Randall's assumption, but it was something I heard when I was flown down to California to do an interview on what I thought was going to be a serious Discovery Network show on the abduction phenomenon. And after it was over, I was talking to a psychologist who'd sort of hosted the program, and I said to him, do you think there's anything in the Roswell incident? And he said, oh, yes. And I said, what do you think happened? And he gave me a very interesting theory that I thought Randy would be interested in hearing. He wondered.
I think we'd all be interested. We'd all be interested in hearing that, Terry. Go ahead.
Well, he wondered if it could have been possibly a V-2 that had crashed that contained monkeys in it.
Well, that might have actually that's actually been battered around quite a bit, and Carl Flock covers that in his book Roswell: Inconvenient Facts and Unwelcome Belief, and he himself doesn't buy that. The material that was discovered is not of a V-2. I suppose if you want to say that if you go through, I mean, I just can't follow these lines of thinking, because it's very clear that Mac Brazel gathered very flimsy material from the ranch, you know, and all the other witnesses, his children and the neighbors, et cetera, and the official press release, they're all talking about, you know, flimsy balloon-like material.
Well, I don't know that that was the first sort of informal deposition that he gave. That came after he was holed up in this, wherever they took him, and made to change his story.
Well, that's what some people like to believe.
Well, and you like to believe the other side, I guess. But okay,
well, you have to go with what people said early on, and not later. You know, a bundle of tinfoil, broken wood beams, and rubber remnants of a balloon, scotch tape with flowers on it. You know, how does that turn into a V2 or a spaceship?
Terry, did you have anything else you wanted to add?
Well, nothing other than I agree with Randy and on his theory about the abduction phenomenon. You do find, as a social narrative, that the narrative splits into two directions, as Randy has said. One where you have very helpful, almost spiritual aliens who, you know, more or less conform to the traditional definition of angels, and then the very cold, calculating, non-communicative aliens of Bud Hopkins. And, you know, either there are so many aliens involving themselves with us, or we're looking at, as Randy says, a psychological phenomenon that you know, deserves to be investigated further.
Well, let me throw one other possibility out there, and that that would be a supernatural encounter. What if we're talking about not good aliens and bad aliens, but angels and demons?
Well, I do find that hard to believe, because, well, you'd have to believe in angels and demons, and then you'd have to bring in all sorts of other belief systems.
Well, and much of the world does, though, Terry. Much of the world does.
Yeah, that's true, but a great many people believe that the Earth is only 6,000 years old, you know, and that dinosaurs and the Flintstones walked together, you know, and
The New Earth creationists are a small fraction of, in terms of the number of people that believe, you know, in a spiritual world. Anyway, Terry, did you want to? We lost Terry. All right. Okay, Randall. Well, there you have it. You know, I was expecting a lot more anger, quite frankly.
Well, that's why Flock's book is subtitled The Will to Believe. Roswell's become like a religious dogma for people, and they want to believe in it. And they just don't want to look at the facts. You know, there'll be 9 witnesses who say it was just a balloon, and then they'll ignore those and pick on the one person who comes up with some wild story.
Yeah. Well, I was expecting to hear more from sort of the devotees of the late Dr. Mack and Bud Hopkins and Dr. David Jacobs.
I urge everyone to read Terry Matheson's book, because he does an amazing job of taking them all apart using words from their own book and the regression transcripts. It's not stuff that he's made up.
Again, how do people get a copy of Aliens and UFOs?
My book, www.booklocker.com/5920.
Give us that one more time.
Yeah, www.booklocker, that's all one word, booklocker.com/5920.
Have you ever been invited to speak at, for example, the National UFO Congress down in Phoenix?
Well, no, my book actually just came out in 2014, so it's
right.
Gathering some traction.
All right. That would be interesting to see who in a room filled with hardcore ufologists. However, Randall, thank you so much. I've enjoyed this conversation immensely.
Okay. Thank you for having me on the show.
We should also mention Randall's a musician, Randy and the Retreads. Check it out, randyandtheretreads.com. All right. Here's Raphael Sadiq and Keep Marching. When we come back, An Amazing Dog and Charlie Manson. All awaiting right here on Coast to Coast AM. Stay with us.